we sat with them and I told them my story, and it was like you could see it in their face. They're like, okay, cool, he's one of us now, like he's been through some stuff. And so I think told that because I wanted to realize like you guys aren't alone, man. Like we're here to help you. I've been through it, but I'm gonna try and do my best, and my system is gonna try and do his best to get you guys back, getting you back at a level that was greater than when you were previously.
Kyle Sammons, before we start, tell me your top three coffee shops and how to make the perfect cup of coffee.
Top three coffee shops. I'll have to say one is actually in Chicago. It's
Oh.
Intelligentsia. Number two is here in Seattle, Root Coffee. And then three, I'd have to go with the Bay Area because I'm from there. So Equator Coffee.
Cool. And then how does one make the perfect cup?
Perfect cup, you got to have the right resources. That's a scale, that's a burr grinder, and that's a Chemex. So I travel with that wherever I go.
Wow, dedicated. I got some insider info. I just got done chatting with Hunter.
Yeah.
And then I said, tell me something I can like just completely throw Kyle off with. He's like, dude, he's like a coffee snob for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, even when I was, a team side, like that was the first thing I packed in my bag was making sure I had all my coffee gear.
Oh my.
That didn't matter. It didn't matter what else, man. Just making sure we got a good cup of coffee.
You go hard. I like it. I like it.
Yep.
It's super interesting. Like, no matter what topic it is, there's so many layers to it. So, like, my twin bro, he bowled in high school and college. And, like, bowling on the surface, you'd be like, oh, it's just like fun. You just do it when you're, out being social. But, like, there's so many layers. So, I'm sure you could go super deep into the science of coffee and everything.
Yeah, there is a lot of layers. And, I was laid up on the couch with a patellar tendon rupture. So I figured I would watch a coffee documentary, and that opened my eyes to where I am today, drinking coffee a certain way. So.
And the rest is history. So, a little bit of a different intro, but Kyle is the VP of Performance for Strive Tech, which I'm excited to kind of hear a little bit more about as they're making some waves. But formerly was the Director of Sports Science at UW Football. He spent some time coaching at Nevada Reno, and I stumbled upon his stuff, well, more so through social media, but more specifically from a super informative, well put together webinar for 1080 Motion about two RTP return and play Achilles cases. I know that that's a big part of kind of what you do, as you reference an injury that you had yourself. But I reached out. I said, hey, I really like that talk. I just have a few specific questions and would just like to say hello. Super nice guy. Had to get him on in a little bit different setting and share with the rest of the world. So tell me something good that's going on in your life, and then anything I missed, and we will get on to it.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. VP performance at Strive Tech, which it's surface EMG embedded in a compression shorts with an accelerometer in the belt buckle. So we can get good granular data on movement of athletes from the muscle level, but also to the external level. So accelerations, decelerations.
All right, so these questions, a little bit not X's and O's, and these first two questions I've been dabbling with a little bit more, but the older I get, relatively speaking, that like I had a super awesome childhood and I learned a lot of cool things. So first, tell me a little bit about what your parents were like, some of the biggest things they shared with you, and anything that you like realize now as an adult looking back, you're like, oh my gosh, that was like a big deal.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Parents are essentially who I am today. They were molding us, me and my brother. I have a older brother. He's 4 years older than me, but they molded us into who we are today, and they were strong influences on us. The main things are they just instilled dedication, hard work, and we actually got to see what that was. And just how you treat people. So have integrity and be respectful. And the last piece was manners, which I think in today's world, like manners have kind of gone by the wayside.
Oh
But
my gosh, yeah.
so they did a really good job with that. And at a very young age, they showed us what true love was and how they supported us. And they went to all of our sporting events. But also too, we struggled. I'll be honest. There was a point in time, like my family sat us all down and we almost had to leave California and go to a different state because of how expensive it was becoming in California and how we were struggling financially. So seeing that at a very young age opened my eyes to the real world, but also to how family can either be fractured or can come together and be stronger. And I think that was an example of how to come together stronger. And it doesn't matter what's thrown at you, as long as you have your strong people in your corner, your family and your friends, and you can lean on them they can lean on you. So that's kind of who I am. They instilled that into me. And then they were so supportive during my athletic endeavors. They went to every high school football game. Then I was at the junior college, went there. And then I went to University of Nevada. And part of the reason I chose University of Nevada is because it was a 3-hour drive from where I lived. And my family could come. And more importantly, my dad, he got diagnosed ALS in 2008. And so he was, you know, declining. And I figured it'd be best to go to University of Nevada Reno so I could go home and see him, but he could come up and see me play.
For sure. I think a common answer the few times that I've asked that has just been like the example and just like the consistency of that example, obviously, is you spend like every day with them. But how old were you when that convo happened about potentially moving? Sounds like a heavy convo.
Oh man, 10 years old. And
were you able to like comprehend that, that?
The only comprehension I had was I would have to get new friends. And that was it. And I'd be playing on a different baseball, football team. And that was really about it. But outside of that, you know, you kind of start to think like as a kid, you're like, your home is your home and that's all you know. And so you're thinking about, wow, I'd have to have new friends, a new place to call home. So there's a lot of layers to it. But also too, like kids can be very adaptable. And I think I am also very adaptable. I can go anywhere and be just fine.
For sure. And last thing on that. So I'm a saver. My bro's a spender. But do you think a conversation like that at that age would like attune someone to like financial literacy and stuff like that? Or is it more just conceptual at that point?
I think it's more like theory and conceptual because you really don't know like what a dollar can buy you. You just know you need money to live in the world. That's all you need. Like to understand, hey, there's either spend more than you save or you save more than you spend. And so it's a very simple equation. But no, I really didn't have a concept other than what I was talking about, just you might not be able to have as much as abundance, which I think that's another topic. But
and then just to be mindful of like asking for stuff or not asking for stuff, for sure. Sounds like an interesting but impactful moment. So next, last kind of on that topic, any of those like childhood moments or stories kind of like we just talked about? But I guess I'll give an example, like maybe because I'm bad at losing, but probably most people in this space were good athletes, but I did get cut from 7th grade volleyball. Don't worry, I'm still not over at Mr. Hyde. But any of those moments that like just seemed like part of like growing up, you're like, oh my gosh, that was actually like super, super important.
Yeah, I think growing up playing sports was a big part of our life. And I think sports can mold you. And I think it exposes you to winning and losing, but also to hard work. And what that truly means, and then also being part of a team and how you can either hurt or help the team win. And so, yeah, I got a kind of similar story, you know, like getting recruited as a white wide receiver was very interesting. This is before, you know, you had like Julian Edelman and Wes Welker and stuff like that. But I got no offers. But no meanwhile, offers. I made like all Metro. So that's part of San Francisco. That's part of Oakland. That's part of the North Bay as well. So it's a pretty big pocket of athletes. And, you know, I played receiver and had significant stats. It's just, where are the offers? And so that kind of allowed me to see the world a little differently. And I think that also drove me. It was definitely a chip on my shoulder that I didn't use in a negative way. It was just motivating. And I knew I could play at the Division I level. It's just at that time I had no offers. And so I went to a junior college.
Dang, yeah, I'm sure when it finally hit you, just like all like bright eyed and you're just like waiting, doing your thing. And then like, then reality hits, you know?
Yep. And I think that's the honest truth is, you know, as we were highly successful and we won everything in our area and we got all these accolades and I had, you know, 1500 yards receiving and 12 touchdowns. And like, it didn't really matter because at the end of the day, our level of football was very different than, you know, what was out there. And so that exposed me to different layers of athletic competition. And so then I went to junior college, used that to drive me. And kind of the same thing happened where it's, you know, you're producing and you're on successful teams. So I was there for 18 months. And then luckily the offers started trickling in a little bit. And so I had some offers, took some trips, and that's where I landed at University of Nevada, Reno.
And then it's that realization of like, you can do everything right and everything in your power and everything people were telling you to do, but there's so many things not kind of in your control, not to be cliche, but
yeah, no, it's true. Like, really only focus on the things you can control. And that's more of like the Stoic philosophy, right? Like, don't worry about the outside noise, because that's not going to get you anywhere other than just make you really clouded in your thoughts and confused. So I just knew I had to do something, and that was getting better football player, but also too, just that's where I started to get into athletic performance. That's, you know, weightlifting, that's sprinting, that's change of direction type work. So
are you a Stoicism Daily Stoic Ron Holiday guy?
Love that. Yep. So my fiance and I. Yeah.
Oh, I'm working through this one right now.
Yeah, so that's a funny one.
You go as that for the people just listening.
His books are phenomenal. And so working at University of Washington, Coach Peterson actually had that book for the staff to read.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So next, that's a little bit of a kind of background setting up to now. So next, the first kind of big professional story, I call it like the fork in the road, you know, obviously looking back, where it's like, oh my gosh, if like I had gotten that job versus that one, or, you know, anything that could have been like a simple left versus right. What was that kind of first biggest moment for you?
The first biggest moment set me on a trajectory I'm still on right now, actually. And that was the fork in the road was graduated in 2008, and I had a finance degree, actually. So I went into the finance world thinking that, you know, like money is going to solve all problems and, you know, drive these fancy cars. And like, you're 20 years old, right? 21 years old. And all you think about is like, how cool that could
make
be.
More money, yeah.
So I realized I got into that and I hated it. And the reason I hated it, because I was a day trader. 2008, kind of just like a history lesson. That was the start of the recession. And that's when they were slashing jobs. I just graduated the finance degree. But I knew my true passion was sports performance. And so when I was doing all of like the stock day trading, I was actually reading on the side and just becoming educated and self-educating myself with, you know, physiology, anatomy, and stuff of that nature. And then I would leave my day trading job and go train high school kids. And so that's where the fork in the road was, is I realized I didn't want to go finance anymore. So I left a paying job in finance, went to an unpaid job at University of Nevada to be an intern to get into the strength and conditioning field. I was 22 years old, 23 years old. So that's important to know. Like,
yeah,
you leave paying jobs to no paid. And it just shows like I was truly passionate about that. And that's also too, like what my dad told me before he ended up passing away, is like, just follow your passion. The money will come from your passion. And just that was really hit home for me. And the last thing he told me was, not before he passed, but the last thing he told me in general was just, you can't take your money to your grave. And that kind of hit home. So I was like, well, my true passion is strength and conditioning and helping people. And that's, you know, I went to University of Nevada and climbed the ranks there.
What was it like talking with some of your close friends or your parents where it was like, I think I'm going to like leave my full-time job? Was it like, are you sure? Or was it like, heck yeah, go dude.
There was a lot of resistance. It's like, you just freshly graduated. You have this fresh
degree.
Give
it a chance. And yeah.
Everybody's like, no, give it a chance. And it really felt like it was forced for me. It didn't fit me. Because you go from playing a sport, being in a team, to then sitting at a desk. And I was like, dude, this is not what I want to do. So it was hard at first, but everybody then saw like how passionate I was, and then there was support coming in. But I think it was very interesting seeing people's responses. Yeah.
I think it would be super interesting. And this was part of my exercise science, like 101 class, but just to talk with a real person in that job you think you want to do. So for example, like working in the private side, you work when kids are not in school. So it's like 4 to 9 PM during the week and, you know, 1 or 2 days a weekend. And like, not that that's every job has its pros and cons, but like, that's something that you don't know unless you just simply talked about that with someone who does it, you know, or like if you said, hey, I want to be like a financial advisor, well, like, what does it look like day in and day out? You know, like, you don't really talk about what it's really like. So if you had known where it's like, yeah, I just like wake up at 7 a.m. and then I sit in a desk all day and then I go home. And of course there's pros and cons, but like, I think just getting that school education on a certain like field is not setting people up for like the most success, because that's not real life. That's a total different side tangent, but
no, I think you're spot on. I think formal education is great in a lot of areas, but it's also shortcoming in a lot of areas. And I think real world versus like academia is very different. And I realized that in the finance world, and I realized that in the sports performance world. So kind of in both worlds, I realized that pretty quick.
And then last kind of question on this topic. So I had a coworker who actually had an accounting degree, and it was kind of funny. We would just be talking as a staff, and I guess it came up just like muscle fibers and like motor unit recruitment and just some stuff kind of like that. And this coworker was like, "Oh my gosh, like what is that?" You know, it's like, "Oh, it's from like the first year of school. Like, what are you talking about?" It's like, that sounds super fun. It's like, yeah. So now like the CSCS, you have to have a relevant degree. And it's not that I ever like use those buzzwords, or I bought all my major textbooks, but I recently just sold them all, 'cause like I never flipped through them. But I think just to have in the back of your mind, like you do understand the foundational like physiology and stuff like that, not to recite it, but just, you just know. So do you think, obviously you're doing very well right now, but not having that, I guess, technical formal background in it, helped, hurt, because you learned on your own terms, or kind of just talking about not having that degree background?
That's a great question. I think everybody's always going to tell me you don't have a formal background in it. And that's one thing I realized early on, is I have to separate myself. And that's kind of going back to the chip on my shoulder. I knew I didn't have a formal education, so I had to do something to close the gap and get smarter in that area and just become educated. And so I think it's a blessing in disguise that I didn't have a formal degree, because they kind of like force things down your throat to learn a certain way. Whereas on your own, you can dabble in a lot of different areas and you can start connecting a lot of dots, I think, faster. As long as you have the sound principles in play. And I think I'm always a big believer in understand principles and then apply methods. And I think if you do the other way around, which I think a lot of people do today, you get confused. And you're like, why didn't I have the results that I wanted? Or why did they get hurt? Or whatever it is. So I view it as it's a benefit. And that's kind of like, I think, probably a bias on my end. But I've had to learn a lot quickly. And I've had to do it in a manner where it's beneficial to the team, organization, and athletes. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And then you learn how you learn, and it's more efficient, and then you're becoming a better learner at learning. And then whether it was diving into like 1080 stuff or plot twist, we have two Achilles now. You're like, don't worry, I got this, you know? So next, what is like that coolest, craziest story that like you couldn't even make up if you tried, that like only someone in performance could like kind of comprehend how wild it is?
Well, that question I sat on for a while, actually, and I think it's going to go back to the presentation that I gave, and that's the two Achilles ruptures. And I know people are gonna be like, what the heck, you're talking about injuries? And I think the reason it is because it happened 5 days apart from each other. And so why that's important to know is that something was going on in the training at that point in time that allowed that to take place. And so once again, here we go, like, I had never dealt with Achilles ruptures. I had dealt with athletes, you know, with ACL ruptures and like torn pecs and stuff of that nature. But Achilles, everyone's like, whoa, what are you going to do? And so this was part of my job. I was like the director of sports science, but also too a reconditioning specialist. And I helped collaborate with our sports med and ATCs. And then I would take the athletes with my assistant, and we'd load and we'd devise plans, a periodized plans of loading systems and strategies. So the Achilles ruptures, and I think the reason that is because we did it in a manner that was safe, objective, and we had a great return on investment. And that was 50% faster than what a lot of research was showing for high-level athletes. And so we got the guys back in 6 months, where a lot of people were saying 9, 12, 18 months. So it was fun. We had to learn fast, and we had to learn a lot of different things, tendons, muscles, bones, and everything in between, which I think in your formal education you do learn about. But I think the emerging research is coming out now is challenging a lot of that. And I think we need to understand athletes' capacities are very different than timeline-driven models, I guess is the best way to put it.
So if it was more of like a checkpoint system than like a chronological system.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just tapping in to understand how are they adapting, how fast, what is their neural competencies that they're expressing. And every checkup they're going through with our med staff and our ATCs, like they're making crazy progress. And that's where we got a lot of questions asked. But I think at the end of the day, why I'm saying this is because the athletes are the ones that want to play. And so when they hear 12 months, we're like, okay, we got to figure out a plan that might be superseding that. So we did that, and that was a lot of fun. And I think that was probably the most fun I've had in strength conditioning. And then the last piece, crazy story. I'm a bilateral tendon rupture candidate here. So I've ruptured both. They were 11 months apart from each other. And why that's important to know again is because it was how I was training. And so I'm always trying to find root problems, why things take place. So one took 8 months, one took 5 months. But afterwards, and kind of like the formula and the framework that we put together for the Achilles guys, I was running myself through it.
So it happened after all that stuff, your own.
So the Achilles, my own, yeah, it was actually before the Achilles guys. Okay. And so like why it's important is there's always neural inhibition at play in a sense, like you have these things sewn back together. You're going to have this like neural guarding take place. And so I was curious for myself to run myself through a similar process and, you know, through GPS on one day. And after we went through some weeks of doing this process, I was out to blow out 21.8 miles an hour, which at 36 years old with two patellar tendon ruptures, I think is kind of interesting. So, yeah.
Were you squatting, wrestling a bear? How does one rupture there?
Well, the muscles were stronger than the tendons. And then you go into jumping, which there's a time constraint. I think some crazy things start to happen. And so I just wasn't training the tendons the right way, to be honest with you. It looked more or less like a powerlifting, bodybuilding-esque type workout that I used to do. Like, and so
with surprise plyos.
Yeah. Yeah. So you take the force side and you do a lot of that. And then you go and end up on your like velocity side, hypothetically. And the tendons weren't ready. Let's put it that way.
Playing hoops and then 360 windmill just didn't go as planned.
Yeah, you know, took off for that dunk and blew apart my tendon. So
pick up basketball. My mentor was playing. It was actually the summer of my internship, and it made my internship. I got my 200 hours in like 5 weeks because I basically took over his job. He was playing pickup and he planted. Someone hit his hip, and then he knew it wasn't his ACL, but it was just like a crunch. Top of his tibia fractured like 9 places and everything. And pick a basketball, man. Wild.
It'll do it to you.
The Wild West.
It is.
Of LA Fitness. All right. So next, what is the most proud of / full circle moment? Like one that definitely took some time to look back and be like, that played out how it should. You know, that I finally have like closed the book on that. Like, I'm super happy with how that all played out.
Working with injury guys, I think it challenges your thoughts and it challenges you and your systems hypothetically. And so working with all these injured guys, I say a lot, like we had some major injuries that we dealt with. It's football, let's be honest, that does take place. So looking back, that was probably the aha moment for me. It was like, okay, what we put together. So my assistant, who's now my friend as well, like, we put it together and we ran these guys through it, and it had great returns for the Achilles guys, had great returns for torn pecs, had great returns for ACLs. And so looking back, we did a great job of synthesizing so much information very quickly and building out this framework. And so I'm probably the most proud because those two Achilles guys are still playing present day, and they're excelling right now. And so looking back, that's probably the most proud, is like dealing with those Achilles guys and seeing how they're still functioning at high rates and they're playing the sport they love.
With especially with RTP guys, because it's a lot more intimate, you know, one or two guys, not the whole group, a lot of time together. And there can be some like vulnerable moments because injuries suck and emotional and whatnot. Is being able to share your own experiences, did that help kind of connect? then you're like, oh, I guess it probably was a good thing I ruptured both my tendons.
Yeah. Yep. Because kind of like a quick backstory, when I ruptured both my patellar tendons, it was the same surgeon that repaired me both times. And so I asked him, I was like, why is this happening? And
deja vu.
There really wasn't a good answer to that. He kind of just looked at me and said, well, you did have patellar tendonitis, so it might have weakened the tendon. Not his fault. It's just the way I work is I'm like, that's not the answer I want. Like, yeah. I want to figure this out. And so that happened in 2013. And so the Achilles guys that we worked with was in 2021. So that's, 8 years difference. So there was a lot that took place. And I think a lot of the emerging research we were just combing through and listening to people talk, they're way smarter than us and, synthesizing this information. But yeah, to your original question, I think with me going through two major reconstruction surgeries of tendons, I know what they go through. I went through it myself and I could definitely empathize with them. Yeah.
Was there ever a point in time where like they might have asked you about it, or you realized that like that story, being able to like share that, was more impactful than any sort of like research you could have read?
Like, I think so.
That's what these guys care about. It's not the freaking research, you know?
No, they just, all they cared about was one, getting better and getting better fast, which we did that. We increased their max speed by 8 to 10% with two guys after going through our like process of the Achilles framework. But we sat with them and I told them my story, and it was like, you could see it in their face. They're like, okay, cool. He's one of us now. Like, he's been through some stuff. And so I think told that because I wanted them to realize like, you guys aren't alone, man. Like, we're here to help you. I've been through it, but I'm going to try and do my best. And my system is going to try and do his best to get you guys back and getting you back at a level that was greater than when you were previously.
Yeah. Just to get that, like, he's one of us moments, I think is so impactful. So it's cool that was able to happen, and maybe you should rupture your patella tendons more often.
I don't recommend it.
10 out of 10 would not recommend.
Nope.
So those are all the kind of big questions going through, like the childhood, not the traumas, just the childhood, the fork in the road, the craziest moment, and then the biggest kind of full circle. So I want to say thank you, sir, for your time, your openness, your candidness, giving me multiple hours of your time. But now I want to roll out the red carpet for you to shamelessly plug, emphasis on shameless. What do you got going on? Strive Tech, where people can get more of you. I think that webinar is still on Tenny's website, but if people want to learn more about RTP or just you in general, where should they go?
Yeah, I think if people have questions about the framework that we put together, they can just reach out to me directly. Like, they can find me on Instagram or Twitter. Those are probably the two best, and then an email, like, we can put that out too. But no, I think the webinar is still available. People can go back and watch that. So I'm not very good with social media. So I do think if they want to reach out, by all means, it's, my Instagram is Kyle_Scammons_, and then Twitter is @CoachKSammons, I think is what it is. So those are the two places. And if anybody has any questions, interest about RTP and superseding some timelines, feel free to reach out.
For sure. So thank you very much again. I hope you enjoy your next cup of coffee.
Yeah, you know what? Can't wait to brew another one and stay caffeinated.
Stay caffeinated. I love it.